Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Greetings, gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. My name is Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on Twitter and Parler. Real Scott McKay on Instagram. You can find me on YouTube by searching Scott McKay. On the web, you'll find the mountaintoppodcast.com website, and I also invite you to join us on Facebook in the thriving men's group that is the Mountaintop Summit. With me today is a new friend of mine. His name is Dre Baldwin, but you can call him Dre all day. He is the author of Work on Your Game and The Mirror of Motivation, and he is a former pro basketball player who nowadays is helping men just like you and me to be at the top of our game. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is working on our game and being at the top of it. Dre, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me here, Scott. I'm really excited to be at the mountaintop. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, with a name like The Mountaintop, for a podcast, it's got to be all about being at the top of your game, right? That's kind of built into the name of the show. Yeah, man. So you are a former pro basketball player, and we were chit-chatting before we hit record on this, and you actually played in Lithuania, which is a huge, huge hotbed of basketball. I mean, Lithuanians are huge basketball fans.
Yes, they are big basketball fans, a lot of attractive women there too. And it was the first place that I had ever traveled outside of the USA. So it was a place that I always had that memory of walking through the center in downtown Kaunas, Lithuania.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a heck of a country to go to as the baptism by fire for, you know, going to a foreign country for the first time. It's not, you know, going to Cancun or going to Paris or London. It's a place that's kind of off the beaten track for most tourists, huh?
Yeah, I don't think most tourists would actually even think of going to Lithuania in the first place. But it is actually a very beautiful place. You go there at the right time of year. And especially if you're a basketball fan, you can't get any better than Lithuania.
Yeah, absolutely true on both accounts. The first Lithuanian basketball player of note who I can remember is Arvydas Sabonis. And since then, you've had lots of really prominent basketball talents come out of that, like Valančiūnas and lots of other guys. And so Lithuania really is a thing when it comes to basketball. What was it like playing over there? What were the fans like?
Well, the fans are definitely very invested into their basketball teams. And depending on the team you're on, the better that team is or the better their tradition is that that team has, the more rowdy those fans can be, the more invested that they are, the more that they're happy when you win and the more pissed off they are when you lose. So they are all in there. And especially being a tall black guy walking around that town, it's not like you can hide. So they all know who you are and they'll let you know when you're doing well. And if you're not doing so well, it's not that they'll be negative to you, but you might feel a little more invisible when you're not having good games. That's the best way that I would describe it.
Yeah, what was it like getting all the attention when you were walking around town? I mean, indeed, people are like, oh, that's the basketball guy. Lots of autographs, lots of people wanting to take pictures, anything like that?
Absolutely. And the thing is, it's not even that I was that famous of a player coming over there. The thing, at least at that time, this is where I started my career, Scott. So this is in 2005. So this is before we had, for the most part, cameras even on our phones. So walking around there, even though I wasn't brand name famous as some other players might have been in the country at that time, even American guys, just walking around as a tall black guy, they know why you're there. Now, there's no other reason why you as a 6'4 black man is walking around Kaunas, Lithuania, except you're on a basketball team. So there would be kids, females who would just stop you and want to take a picture with you or get you to sign something or want to shake your hand, just because they knew that you were this basketball player that was coming there to be, you know, one of the saviors of one of the basketball clubs. So that was, it was kind of a surreal feeling if you're not used to it. And I definitely was not at that time. But at the same time, coming from the background that I came from, for those who don't know, I came from an NCAA Division III school where the majority of athletes don't make it pro in any sport. So for me to be in Europe, getting paid to play professional basketball, it was really a surreal experience just to know that I had, quote unquote, made it at that time.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, Emily and I actually have been to Vilnius, Lithuania, and went and watched a basketball game because I wanted to see this phenomenon that is Lithuanian basketball. And you're so right about the fans. I mean, we as Americans can easily picture a European, say, soccer football audience. with their banners and the fireworks and singing in unison and cheering. And they're doing that stuff indoors in basketball arenas in Lithuania. It's something that's kind of completely novel to an American NBA audience for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The NBA fans are very cool. NBA fans, they're sometimes the stars themselves. But in Europe, and this is anywhere in Europe, those fans can be, they're super rowdy. They could be angry at the other fans, angry at the other team, angry at the referees. So they have a ton of passion. And one thing a lot of people don't understand about basketball in Europe as it compared to the NBA, in the United States, professional sports is about money. Everything is driven by money and making money for the players, making money for the teams, the owners and all of that, the TV contracts. In Europe and just overseas in general, the whole purpose of the sporting clubs, all the sports, is for the pride of the country or pride of the town that you play for. That's really what it's about. What a lot of people don't know is that overseas, and I can't speak on other sports, but in basketball, many of the teams aren't even profitable. They either break even or they lose money every year, but because of their sponsors and the deep pockets of the ownership, they're okay with breaking even or losing money because the owners or the sponsors have so much pride for the team or the town or the country that they're willing to do that just to keep the tradition alive, as opposed to in the United States where, you know, with capitalism, everybody's chasing the dollar.
Yeah, I think that's a valid take and something I haven't really thought through as much as I could have. I'm in my 50s, and when I was a kid, you know, the Baltimore Colts were the pride of Baltimore. And when the team left the town, we took it personally. It was an insult to us. It was like if your wife cheated on you and left you, and we didn't love her anymore. So when they went to Indianapolis, we didn't want to acknowledge it. It's like, you know, your wife met someone else and took her new husband's last name. It just hurts.
Right.
So, you know, back in the day, certainly if you think of like Green Bay and places like that, you can still see that element of civic pride surrounding the team, obviously.
Right.
But back in the day, I mean, if you were in Cleveland, you were a Browns fan. And, you know, other sports as well. If you're in Cleveland, you're an Indians fan. And nowadays, it seems like you can live in Dallas and wear a Lakers jersey around because you follow LeBron James, whichever team he goes to, because he plays on the team. I'm not sure. Maybe you can opine on this, but I think that all started with Michael Jordan. All of a sudden, everybody was a Bulls fan because Michael Jordan was so transcendent. It seems like that's where it started.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're probably right. And I'll tell you why. That we don't have the sports monogamy, I think is kind of what you were describing.
I love it. Yeah.
Not too much monogamy when it comes to sports teams, at least for some people.
Yeah, we're sluts, aren't we? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. There are some people, certain teams, you would say New Yorkers when it comes to the Yankees, or if you're from Queens, you got the Mets. You got Knicks fans like Spike Lee. In Miami, you could say maybe the Miami Dolphins, not necessarily the basketball team, the Heat, they haven't been even around as long. But a team like the Dolphins or Dallas Cowboys fans, Green Bay is a great, probably the best example I could think of off the top of my head in American sports, or even the Boston teams, the Patriots, the Bruins, who's other team there, the Red Sox. But with Michael Jordan, the reason why it is with Jordan is because another thing with Mike is that he started the marketability of the individual. Before Mike, in sports marketing, it was all about the team. Even the sneakers, no individual player had their name on a sneaker, or the sneaker was named after that person until Jordan. So when that happened with Michael Jordan, every athlete out there and every fan out there noticed, oh, we can just market ourselves as an individual person. It doesn't have to be about the group. It can just be about me. And the thing is, that has led to so much, you know, me too that we get nowadays, or look at me rather, not me too. But look at me.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah, two different topics.
Yeah.
So it led to a whole lot of look at me when it comes to sports these days. And the thing that a lot of people misconstrued about Mike, and I told this to my audience, is that even though Michael Jordan is the one who opened the door to that individualism, solo act stuff when it comes to marketing yourself, and you could say that even extended outside of sports, Michael only had that happen because he was so great at raising the level of his team. He was never focused on getting the individual attention. It just happened organically because he was so great. But what happened in the wake of Michael Jordan is a lot of athletes trying to manufacture that individual attention and not raising the level of their teams at the same time. So they wanted Michael's results, but they weren't willing to do all the things that he did in order to get that result. They basically wanted the they were basically eating the icing without baking the cake. But Mike, he did that, but his happened, again, naturally, not because he was trying to make it happen.
You know, this is a fascinating conversation, and there's so many different directions to take it. You know, thinking back as you're talking, first of all, the Bostonians still have that civic pride. I got to hand it to those guys. Yeah, for sure. But if you go back to the Dallas Cowboys branding themselves as quote unquote America's team, that may have been the groundbreaking effort. And I'm going to choose my words here carefully at trying to transcend a metro area with the popularity of a team. And largely it was met with utter disgust by fans of other teams in other metro areas. Most people who aren't from Dallas or from Texas can't stand the Cowboys because, you know, don't try to tell us you're our team. My team is, you know, the Patriots or the Colts or the Raiders, not your stupid team. Screw you guys. And yet, really, the Dallas Cowboys are the first ones I know of who really tried to break that barrier. And it was perceived as so arrogant. Yet nowadays, you know, it's all about the individual, like you said. And that helped those teams in many ways, even though the individuals were seeking to find more favor, more fame, more attention, more of the spotlight for their own selves. It really did help some of those teams, especially in bigger areas who could afford those all-stars, to sell more jerseys, get more fans outside of their own metro area, and indeed outside the country. I mean, look at the phenomenon that NBA is overseas in nations like China and stuff now. It really is what catalyzed tremendous global growth of a sport that used to be very provincial. I also thought about Joe Namath in the early 70s, and this is, you know, way before your time, I'm sure. He tried to draw attention to himself, and it really didn't work as well as Michael Jordan.
Yeah, it's harder than football. Football is too team-based, and main difference between football and basketball is Joe Namath was a quarterback, so there's only so many things you can do as a quarterback, even though I do believe quarterback is probably the most important position in all of professional sports. As far as team sports go, you're still limited in what you can do. You can't block. You can't play defense. You don't kick the field goals. But in basketball, every player can do every function. Anything needs to be done on the court, any one of the five players can do it. You can dribble. You can shoot, pass, grab a rebound, dunk the ball. Whereas in football, everybody has an assigned role, and most players are only playing at most 50% of the game. So it's harder to make yourself that individual in football as it is in basketball, even though these days, and I guess even back to the 70s, like you said, with Joe Namath, players keep trying, but none of them is ever going to do it the way a basketball player can do it. The game is not set up for them to do that.
I think that's a valid point. And I also think in terms of team sports, Namath was too far ahead of his time. The world wasn't ready for it. Mass media wasn't up to it. Also, Namath was probably a little needy and too much of an attention seeker vis-a-vis his actual real talent. I mean,
he was trying too hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Now, from an individual sports level, I think it's been much more of an open playing field for finding that individuality and that personal fame. I mean, the first name that will come to mind for all of us is Ali. I mean, Muhammad Ali was a phenomenon because of who he was, not only what he did in the ring. And that ability to be a self-promoter and be so out there and so self-confident and still have people love you for it, no one has equaled that. But certainly if you're a boxer or a tennis player or a golfer like Tiger, even a gymnast or any kind of Olympian, if it's not a team sport, then the world has always seemed to embrace the superstar potential of that one person doing the individual sport. Certainly Lance Armstrong to a degree before his fall from grace there. And what all these people have in common, getting back to Michael Jordan, is that they were at the top of their game. What they did on the field spoke for itself. And then, you know, that individualism, that marketability, and the capitalization on that marketability, when done right, arose from that. And perhaps coincidentally, Dre, I believe Michael Jordan himself was the one who made the idea popular of working on your game when you're actually at the top of it. I mean, when you're the greatest, when you're the best at what you do, that's not the time to rest and hope for the best. Jordan was famous for being the world's greatest basketball player and still walking into the gym after everybody else had left and gone home to get a beer and shooting 500 more three-pointers.
Yeah, Michael set that standard, and the docuseries that came out in spring 2020 helped cement that for the people who saw it the first time and people who read the books. And then also for the new generation of people who only know Jordan from the sneakers and the crying meme that had been going around. So,
right.
Yeah, he definitely did set that standard of being at the top and then continuing to put the work in as if you weren't the person at the top. But at the same time, again, like I mentioned earlier, he wasn't doing it for the attention. These days with social media, who knows what Michael Jordan would be if he was around now. But a lot of times I see athletes, especially in a sport like basketball, which is the one I follow the closest, it seems like they're doing it, yes, for the effort and to get better. But at the same time, hey, let me make sure my followers know that I'm doing it. Let me make sure the media knows about this. Let me make sure I get some attention and make some content out of this. And that the art of it goes away when it looks like you're trying too hard. And that's the part of it that I wish, hopefully, some athlete comes along and brings that back. I think there are some people who have the potential, but we'll see. We haven't seen anyone with Mike's charisma. That's the thing that they haven't quite had yet.
Yeah, indeed. I think Michael Jordan absolutely had a charisma, a quiet charisma.
Exactly.
Not an in-your-face Muhammad Ali-esque charisma, but a charisma nonetheless. And back here in the present day, you do see plenty of evidence that, yeah, you know, your talents on the field matters in building your star power, but it's also how you handle yourself, how you conduct yourself. How does a Kobe Bryant get to be in more TV commercials and have his face be more part of the public zeitgeist than a contemporary who's just as good at basketball like Tim Duncan, who wasn't very charismatic a human being and didn't really go for the limelight, if anything, quite the opposite. And you see the public perception of both of those players. I mean, I don't think people dislike Tim Duncan or think he's a jerk or anything, but certainly more attention is given to Kobe in his career. You know, notwithstanding that, even before the tragedy of his helicopter accident, Kobe was much bigger a deal than Tim Duncan. And it wasn't simply because he played in Los Angeles. It was about what you're talking about. And nowadays, look at the difference between, say, LeBron and Kawhi. Same thing, isn't it?
It is very similar. And the thing about Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant had that flair. He just had that confidence. He had this self-assuredness, this cocksure attitude. But at the same time, he backed it up with his performance. He was actually good enough to carry himself that way. And Tim Duncan probably had that same energy internally. He just didn't show it. One thing that we do have to mention when we talk about marketing, especially in basketball, is that it's much easier to market a shorter guy like Kobe, who's around 6'6", 6'7".
Or Steph Curry. Footer.
Right. Or Steph Curry, who looks like a regular guy who works at Walmart, right? You just seen him on TV. And Kobe is a little bit more stature than that. But the average person can relate to Steph Curry better than they can relate to a 7-foot guy like Tim Duncan. So most people aren't 7 feet tall. So with Kobe, you definitely have to factor that in when you compare him to Tim Duncan. And as far as LeBron and Kawhi, they're pretty close to the same size. LeBron is a guy who, again, his performance is not to be questioned. But I think LeBron also is very cognizant of the marketing opportunities in front of him every time he does anything. He does not shy away from a microphone. He doesn't shy away from drawing attention to what he's doing. Now, he's a great performer. So, again, it can't be questioned. But at the same time, sometimes LeBron says and does things that it's clear that he wants to make sure everybody sees him. Whereas Mike didn't have that need, and neither did Kobe. And that's the one thing that whenever you hear the Michael, Kobe, LeBron debate is one thing that people sometimes use against LeBron. That he's trying a little bit too hard to play to the crowd as opposed to just doing his job and being so great at it that it speaks for itself.
Whereas a Kawhi Leonard on the opposite end of the spectrum is completely avoiding the microphone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what he sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So here we are. You've finished your basketball career. Obviously, you're still a geek for the game. And what you're doing is you're helping folks be at the top of their game, to work on their game. You're still using that analogy of sports to help people in the self-help realm to be the best they can be. What caused you to decide, hey, this is what I need to be doing post-basketball career? This is where I want to be. This is where my heart is.
Great question. Where that came from was, just to take you back in the story, in 2005, when I started my pro career, I had gone to this event called an exposure camp. And for those of you who don't know what that is, It's basically a job fair, but it's for athletes. And at an exposure camp, instead of walking around shaking hands and talking about what you can do, you actually bring your sneakers and your gear and you perform. You play. You and a bunch of other players who all want to play pro basketball are all playing against each other and with each other. And in the audience is not just random fans. The audience is full of decision makers. These are the coaches, the scouts, agents, managers, and team owners from around the world who have the power to sign you to a contract. So this is basically a meat market. And what makes it a meat market is because basketball is a team sport. But everybody on your team at an exposure camp is that everybody's trying to get seen and look good. And that doesn't really work in basketball. If everyone's trying to get their personal shine, but you're on the same team, you have some conflicts of interest. So you really have to learn, again, it's like the art of not looking like you're being selfish, but at the same time being selfish. Because if you go there and you play quote unquote team basketball, you're going to leave after the weekend. Nobody's going to remember that you were even there and your opportunity is missed. So at that exposure camp, long story short, I played pretty well. I got a good scouting report and I got the footage from that event. And that footage was on this thing called a VHS tape, which I'm sure some of your audience remembers.
Something that came out shortly after Betamax, which nobody remembers.
Yeah, I don't remember Beta, but I do remember VHS. So I took that VHS tape, got to put it on a data CD, put it on this brand new website that I just heard of where you could put up video for free as much as you wanted. It was called YouTube.com. So I started my brand online. This is before we were calling it a brand, before we were using phrases like content and social media or influencer. I put that video on YouTube. People started watching it. So I just kept going to the gym, bringing my little $100 camera. This is before we had cameras on the phones. And I was just recording myself working out. And I just started putting those videos on YouTube sporadically. Eventually, I started doing it every day around 2009. And it was around that time that players used to ask me, Scott, well, Dre, can you make a program for me? Can you make one for me? Can you make one for me? And I would always say no, because mind you, I'm not an online influencer. It wasn't my job. We weren't even calling it that then. And I'm still a professional basketball player full time. So I was putting the videos out just to help players out because I saw I could pay it forward that way. But it wasn't like this was a business plan. This was right when Google started allowing you to run ads on videos. Believe it or not, those of you who don't know, there was a time when you could watch 10 videos on YouTube and not see one advertisement. This is right when Google started doing that. So I finally got the idea to create a product, a program where I would just take some videos of mine that I'd already made, write a description of them, give a name to the movement, and tell players, all right, this is why you're doing it. This is how you do it in words. Here's a video demonstration. Here's how often to do it. Do 100 dribbles with the right hand, 100 dribbles with the left hand, stuff like that. And I sold these products for $4.99. And that's how I became an entrepreneur. This is still in the middle of my pro basketball career. And while doing that for a little while, I called this program the Hoop Handbook, because hoop meaning basketball, Hoop Handbook. So about a year after I started selling those programs, I started doing these actually at the same time. I started making these videos every Monday on YouTube. Now, mind you, I'm putting a video out every day, basketball drills. But on Monday, I would make this video called the Weekly Motivation. And the reason I made that video is because players would start asking me, Dre, because they know a little bit about my story, because I would reply to their comments and I make a video every now and then just talking about my background, because players want to know who the hell was this guy who's making all these basketball drills. He looks like he can play, but we never heard of him. So I would explain a little bit of my background. So players would ask me, Dre, what kept you showing up and working on your game even after you got cut from your high school team 3 years in a row? Or what keeps you showing up to work on your game every day now? You're a pro basketball player, at least you say you are, but here you are in an empty gym in Miami just working by yourself. You don't have a job. Why do you keep practicing? Or Dre, you know, I practice like you practice, but then I get in the game and I don't do all the stuff that I was doing in practice. How do you have confidence? So I started talking about these things, these just sound bites, not even sound bites, but principles rather, from the mental game that I had learned along the way. And I called it the Weekly Motivation. So one day a commentator said, Dre, well, you're making all these programs, calling them the Hoop Handbook. Why don't you make a mental handbook? So I wrote a book called The Mental Handbook. That wasn't my first book. My first book was actually called Buy a Game, which is a euphemism for get some skills that one of my middle school classmates had told me when I asked him for some basketball advice. And that is how I got into, you know, talking about the mental side of things. And also through those weekly motivation videos with Scott, I would get comments and messages from people who would say, Dre, I'm not even a basketball player, but I came across your videos and I want to let you know that the stuff you talk about is relevant even to people who don't play sports. So that planted the seed in my mind that, all right, when I'm done with basketball, I will still have an audience of people who want to hear me talk about this mental stuff. So when I can't dunk a basketball anymore or jump 40 inches in the air anymore, I will still have relevance to an audience of people who want to learn that mental side of life and how to get to their best version, even if they're not dribbling a ball.
I'm reminded of the old school book, The Inner Game of Tennis, which was...
I have that one. I haven't read it yet, but I heard a lot of great things.
Which was ostensibly about tennis, but really is about confidence and getting your act together and being mentally prepared. Yeah, good stuff, man. So nowadays, when people come to you, obviously you still like to talk about basketball. I'm sure you're still helping basketball players go from good to great. But what would you say to these guys who are listening who perhaps aren't into basketball at all? I mean, you know, let's be realistic here. I am not designed personally to play basketball. I'm too short and all that stuff. Guys know this. I'm not wired at all to play basketball. That's not something I'm going to be good at by design. I'm the opposite of you. As a matter of fact, on this show, I say self-deprecating things in the context of confidence, like, you know, put me in front of a stadium full of people and talk to them about dating advice, and I could do that without any butterflies in my stomach whatsoever. But don't ever expect me to be the backup point guard for the San Antonio Spurs, because I'm not going to be good at that. And having the wherewithal in one's mind to know what your limitations are, realistically speaking, in terms of what you would be good at, what you're gifted at, et cetera, I'm sure is all part of what you do. But for these guys who may not be basketball players, what kinds of input do you give them? How can we all move towards being at the pinnacle of our own respective games, regardless of what that game is, Dre?
Great question. Well, what I would tell people, first of all, is that the whole philosophy that I work with nowadays and that I teach is called work on your game. It's about taking the same mental game tools that are necessary to get into the top 1% in the sports world and how you can apply those same principles in your business and in your everyday life. Or if we got any weekend warriors listening to this, how you can apply it in sports. So those four principles, the four key principles of working your game are: number one, discipline, showing up every single day to do the work. Confidence, putting yourself out there boldly and authentically. Mental toughness, continuing to show up, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success you've expected to achieve is yet to be achieved. And fourth is personal initiative, going and making things happen instead of waiting for things to happen. So I take these principles and break these down. Again, we can get really granular on this stuff when it comes to interpersonal relationships, when it comes to dealing with other people, when it comes to selling yourself, when it comes to finding yourself a mentor, when it comes to being a mentor, when it comes to being a student and a teacher at the same time, especially if you're going to be online, you need to be taking in the information. You also need to be giving it out. So I talk about these. I use these principles and this framework from all different angles, which is why I work with business professionals, people who work at Fortune 500 companies. I still work with athletes, not as a personal trainer, but as more of a person they can talk to more on mindset and just staying professional, even when things aren't going quite so right in their careers. Entrepreneurs, people who are running small businesses, freelancers, people who want to be somebody like you, Scott, or they want to be somebody like me and build their own brand and have an audience, but they're not quite sure how to do it, when to do it, how to get started. And students, parents, teachers, athletes, people from all different audiences, kind of like very diverse mix, similar to what you have here, Scott, who are looking to get that knowledge and get that game, so to speak, from me.
Yeah, those four factors you mentioned are pretty much the four pillars of being a badass, if you ask me. You know, you talk about mental toughness, which we call grit around here, mm-hmm. that ability to withstand obstacles that are thrown at you, the ability to fall down, scuff your knee, get up, brush yourself off, and go back and try again. Those things are very important. But what's been conspicuously absent from this entire conversation thus far, Dre, is talking about how that applies to our relationships with women. And I see a lot of guys who would love to have a great woman in their life, but they either don't know where to start, or they don't trust their ability to succeed with women, or they've already envisioned their own failure. And not to belabor it, but another thing that Michael Jordan was known for was practicing positive visualization. In other words, when he went into the gym and started practicing three-pointers, rather than picturing himself failing and missing the shot and avoiding humiliation, frustration, and loss, every time he took a shot, he pictured it being that final buzzer-beating shot that would take down the Lakers. He pictured himself winning. I see lots of really high IQ guys suffer from this analysis paralysis where they start thinking and analyzing themselves into oblivion. In those situations, I think it's human nature, Dre, for natural entropy to take hold. We naturally start degenerating into negative thoughts like, oh man, if I ask this woman out, what if she rejects me in front of all my friends. Then I get laughed at. Then I'm the butt of all their jokes. And then the woman herself will start pointing at me and laughing. And the next thing you know, these guys have basically destroyed themselves before they've even given themselves a chance. And that's an unfortunate element of human nature, isn't it? How do you help guys overcome that negative visualization and see themselves as even having the ability to get to the top of their game? And what else would you tell them?
Excellent question. So let's break this down. We'll use all of these principles from this work on your game philosophy. First one, let's just start with confidence. Confidence is your willingness to put yourself out there boldly and authentically. And I'll tell you something I heard Idris Elba. He was on the cover of some magazine as, you know, like the sexiest man in the world or whatever they were calling him at the time. And the interviewer asked him, hey, what is your, you know, how do you deal with women? You see a woman you're interested in. How do you approach her? What advice would you give to men who want to be able to talk to women the way that they envision you can talk to women? One of the things that he said was, actually, I'll tell you what he said in a moment. Before we get to that, when it comes to confidence, I did a TED talk actually on this exact topic. People say, well, Dre, I get the whole thing about confidence is it's a belief that you can do something. But what if you've never done something before? How can you become confident? Well, one principle that has been thrown around for years is called fake it till you make it. And one of the things that I feel about fake it till you make it, hopefully you agree with this here, Scott, is that it's not actually a real thing. Because if you're faking it, then you're pretending. Once you decide that you're going to be something other than what you've been, you're not faking. You are actually being. This is a real thing. You are living it. So it's not a pretend thing. This is not a practice thing. It's not a fake it till you make it. It's you've decided that you are going to be a different individual. And what you would do at that point is you would assume the energies, you would assume the posture, you would assume the body language, you would assume the tonality, the everything of the type of person that you see yourself becoming. And I believe it was Stephen Covey in his Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. He had an exercise on this that I remember reading that book probably around age 18 that I used, and it did actually work. Just envisioning the person you want to be, just how that person walks, talks, acts, and thinks, not about anything that you've done. Not about any specific accomplishments to accomplish, but just the way that you carry yourself as a person, which anybody can do anytime that you want to. So once you assume that stance of confidence, the next thing is the personal initiative. So we go back to Idris Elba. And he said, when you see a woman that you're attracted to, the worst thing that a man can do is start thinking about what to do. Because when you see the woman and she sees you, all right, at that moment, it's kind of like when you drive into a parking garage at your home. I live in a condo. So there's a parking garage and the little tag that you have on your window opens the garage, but the gate only opens for one car for a certain amount of time. As soon as that car goes through, the sensor closes the gate back. It's the exact same way when you see a woman you're interested in. You go to Whole Foods and you see her and she sees you. Okay, whoop, now the gate is open. Now you only got a certain amount of time to drive your car through that gate before the gate closes again. Because as soon as she realizes that you're overthinking it, that you're not confident, and that you're not going to approach, because in our society, the woman usually expects the man to approach. As soon as you miss that opportunity, the gate closes. She doesn't see you the same way. I mean, you're still the same attractive guy, but she doesn't see you the same way because you didn't have the balls to walk up to her and say something. And what Idris says is, you see a woman you're interested in, just put your balls on the table and say whatever comes to mind. And it's not even what you say. It's how you say it. And the fact that you had the confidence to approach her that is going to impress the woman is not even the actual words. Because believe it or not, a lot of times the woman is just as nervous as you are because she doesn't know you and she doesn't know how you are going to perceive her either. So that's the personal initiative in going and just stepping right into it. The third thing, and this could even be the first thing, depending on how you want to do it, is the discipline. I tell people all the time, discipline creates confidence. If you want to build confidence in yourself, one thing you can start doing is being disciplined. Being disciplined as in cleaning up your house, making sure the desk in your office is neat, making your bed every day. It doesn't have to be those things. It could be whatever you want it to be. Making sure that you put on clean clothes, a pressed shirt, looking like you have somewhere to be, even if you don't have anywhere to be. It's just the disciplines that you have in your life. Going to the gym every day, drinking a certain amount of water, stop eating candy, stop watching garbage TV shows that aren't doing anything for you. The disciplines that you build, they are things that will help you personally, but that kind of energy emanates out from within you. When you walk past a person in the street or you just assess a person, because we know that 90% of communication is nonverbal, we make inferences about people that without ever even speaking to them, just by the way that they walk and talk and carry themselves, And the level of discipline that you have within you will show non-verbally to other people, even if you never say a word to that person. And people can read these things coming off you all the time. So the more discipline you can build into your life, the more confident you will be, because it's coming from a place that is real. And a woman can sense that in a man from 1,000 miles away. So when you walk up to a woman and approach, again, by the time you open your mouth and start speaking, all right, she's already made 90% of her mind up whether she's going to be interested or not. Only thing she's thinking about at that point is how she's going to get rid of you, or what she's going to give to you, whether you're asking for an email address, an Instagram name, or a phone number, or a date, whatever it's going to be. She's just figuring out what she's going to say back to you, but she already knows whether it's going to be a yes or a no. And as far as the mental toughness goes, not every woman is going to be interested in you. Everything is not for everybody, and everybody is not for everything, and everyone is not for everyone. So if a woman is not interested in you, that's all right. You can just move on to the next one. I know that's kind of trite, but that's really what it is. There are 7 billion people on this planet. Let's just assume that half of them are women. And if you don't believe that there are plenty of other women out there in the world, listen, just go on Instagram, go to the Explore tab, and just start looking. All right, there are plenty of them. All right, so if you miss one, there'll be another one that you can catch or look for or talk to every hour on the hour.
You know, I agree with absolutely everything you just said, and you were on one hell of a riff there. That was great. It is so absolutely true that there are plenty of women out there, and if one of them doesn't like you, she's not speaking on behalf of the entire female gender. Mm-hmm. And one thing I would add to that, because a lot of the things you just mentioned, Dre, indeed are pillars of this podcast. You know, like, for example, most people won't engage in self-help because they're afraid of looking fake. And so they don't even try at all, when in reality, just is precisely as you said it, once you decide you want to be a better person, that better person within you is the authentic version of you. You're simply changing the habits to get to that place. It's not about faking it till you make it. It's about becoming better with intent and with purpose. So I love everything about that. And all of the dynamics you mentioned about getting out of our own way and simply walking up and meeting a woman without any regard for what the perfect thing to say is, not looking for a pickup line, not fearing rejection. All of that is so true. And one original thought I can add to that, vis-a-vis what's been talked about time and time again on this show, is it's amazing to me how it often doesn't make a lick of logical sense whether a woman decides to like you or not, because it's not a decision. I've had women who had no business being attracted to me at all, in my own mind, just absolutely fawn all over me, like weirdly. And I've had women who, in every conceivable way, seem perfect for me. I mean, she would look so cute with me. We have a similar personality. She dresses the way I do. I mean, we're going to get along incredibly well. Just not want any of me and go, ugh, you know, get away from me. It doesn't make any sense. And the beauty of that is every one of us is an individual, male and female. We have our own tastes. We have our own preferences. We like what we like. We don't like what we don't like. Maybe I remind a certain woman of someone she doesn't like. Maybe I look like her brother or something. Who knows? She has her own reasons for not necessarily favoring me that probably, in fact, don't have anything to do with me personally. Therefore, I shouldn't take it personally, and it just simply is what it is. And I think that's an incredible way to look at it. So yeah, the mental toughness comes into play, just like you said. I'm going to talk to women, see if I like them or not first. You know, there's that confidence again. I am the prize. I'm the one who calls the shots here as far as interest or disinterest first. Now, of course, she thinks independently. She can like me or not. But, you know, that's a second piece of the puzzle, not the only piece of the puzzle. So when she decides, hey, you know, we're getting along, a lot of times it will be in tandem with me deciding we get along also. And that's the beauty of life, that, you know, often that works out. But sometimes there are going to be these inexplicable situations and you just got to get over yourself. And I've always kind of thought of it as an extreme sport, Dre. You know, it's the times you wipe out surfing that make those incredible, epic wave rides all that much sweeter. And so there'll be times you crash and burn. There'll be times where you experience great glory and victory. And that's what makes life fun. And ultimately you meet a few women who like you. And once you have those few bonanzas of hot women who think you're great going on in your life, those women love you, it kind of takes the sting off that fourth or fifth woman who decides maybe, you know, not so much, she doesn't like you. So I love everything you just said. And I want to point these guys to a book of yours called The Mirror of Motivation, which they can get for free just by paying shipping when they go to a special URL that I've set up, which is mountaintoppodcast.com/Dre. And I'm also going to add Dre Baldwin's book, Work on Your Game, which you can get on Amazon, to my Amazon influencer page right there at the top of the queue. So you can grab a copy of that along with some other reading material from former guests that we've had on the show while you're at it. And to get your hands on that book, Work on Your Game, and perhaps some others, go to mountaintoppodcast.com/Amazon, A-M-A-Z-O-N. Dre Baldwin, Dre all day, man. What a pleasure talking to you. What a great conversation that went in unexpected directions, as often happens on this show, but it certainly was a lot of fun. And you know your stuff, and you're a hell of a guy. Thanks for dropping by and sharing your wisdom with us, man.
Absolutely, Scott. I had a great time here. Hopefully we can come back and do it again. I think there's a lot of stuff we didn't cover.
Yeah, man. This is one of those conversations that can go on and on and on. And there's always plenty of material, especially when you're talking about working on your game and being at the top of it. That can take so many different forms. So yeah, man, absolutely. And guys, if you have not yet been to mountaintoppodcast.com just yet, go there, click on the red button in the upper right-hand corner and talk to me for free for 25 minutes. We can talk about going from good to great, how to get better women in your life, how to get a leg up in your career, how to have more adventure, and basically be the best man you can be. It's all there for you at mountaintoppodcast.com, along with other surprises like show notes, pictures of our guests, free downloads, and you can also get on my newsletter if you're not there already and get real actionable advice you can use every day at mountaintoppodcast.com. I also invite you to visit our sponsors. Hey, listen, guys, COVID-19 is still going on. The guys at Origin Maine make the absolute best D3 supplement that you can get. The price is right. They will send it directly to your door. You don't even have to go shopping for it. It's all natural. It's a high concentration and it works. I've been taking D3, and D3 is a known protection from getting COVID-19. So go to mountaintoppodcast.com/origin, O-R-I-G-I-N, and get you some, and also take a good look at the factory jeans and those bison boots like I wear around every chance I can get. Like I've told you guys before, I kid you not, I think love is baked into every pair of jeans and every pair of boots they make over there. You will not find better jeans or better boots to wear out in the town that make you look stylish while still staying functional anywhere. mountaintoppodcast.com/origin. And until I talk to you guys again real soon, this is Scott McKay from XY Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by XY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free XY Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.